Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Polinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.
And for those of you who were around in the 1950s and early 60s, that, of course, is some music from Perry Mason.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The lawyer.
I got to tell you, yeah. Well, considering the fact that the book we read this week is full of Perry Mason moments, I thought this was just ideal. And Bobby Jean?
Yes?
For the first time, Richard actually guessed the music coming into work.
Oh, my gosh.
I nailed it.
It's perfect. I'd forgotten what a wonderful piece of music that is. Actually.
I know. I just happened to think of it, and all of a sudden, I got it. And then I asked Richard on the way in, okay, so do you think you might know what the music is? And he goes, well, I can see you trotting out Perry Mason. I said, how did you know that? So, well, this is LA Talk Radio. It is another Thursday evening, a wonderful, beautiful Thursday evening in downtown Sherman Oaks, California. Looking over here at Notre Dame High School and all the palm trees blowing in the breeze. It's pretty here. And, of course, I'm Jim Christina, your host. And I'm sitting in the studio with Richard Polinelli. It happens to be his last night in the chair.
It's my grand finale.
That is right. And, of course, Bobby Jean Bell is on the phone. And you can say
I'm
hi,
here.
Bobby. Okay. Let's get this show on the road because I'm interested and really, really, really excited about speaking with tonight's guest. So, Richard, take it away.
All right. If you are a first-time author and you've just typed those golden words, the end, on your manuscript, you are sitting there thinking your work is all done. You can just sit back and watch those royalty checks fly in, right? Wrong. You still need to have that manuscript edited. It has to be formatted, and you got to create a book cover for it, so that people will see it on the shelves and want to buy that book. And then the hard part comes. You got to market it so that readers will know to even be looking for it. Now, before you throw that manuscript in the trash and give up, take heart. The good people at Black Dog Publishing and Tuscany Bay Books are ready to do all of the heavy lifting for you to get your book in front of the readers so you can get paid at a royalty rate unmatched in the industry. And more importantly, it will allow you to get back to work on your next novel and make more money.
Yeah.
So for more information on this program, you can call Tuscany Bay Books at 805-795-3165. Email them at jchristina@tuscanybaybooks.com. Or if you're feeling very lucky, you can try rpolinelli@tuscanybaybooks.com. Or you can check out our website at blackdogpublishing.co. Just CO, and they will get to you and get you on your way to publisher's success.
That's right. That's right. And since the Cowboy Festival is already gone, so you're not looking for a hat.
It's never too early. It is never too early to shop for next year. So where can I go?
You can go to the Out West Shop, which is your online source for top brands that are a reflection of the equestrian and the Western lifestyle. Shop for unique and distinctive apparel, fashion accessories, home decor, and general merchandise. National brands do include Rock Mount Ranchwear, Scully Leather Company, and American West Handbags, just to name a few. Shop online at www.outwestshop. That's one word.
Outwestshop.com.
Yeah. Enter code WB100 and receive $10 off on your order. Is that still good, Bobby Jean?
It is.
Okay. Or you can call them toll-free and direct at 877-340-9378.
We still can't find a cow big enough to fit my head.
I thought I had one and...
No, it came up short.
No. Okay, since 2009, Target Freight has had a full truckload service, TFM truckload, and LTL service that is the best in the industry. Not only are they exceptionally good at what they do, but they work hard to make your full truckload shipping or LTL experience unparalleled using their customized traffic movement program. Call TFM or Target Freight Management, LTL, today at 844-653-7789. Ask for Mike Matruski for his desk or for truckload or for any of the fine account managers at 888-653-1323 for your LTL. Tell them you heard it on the Writer's Block, and TFM will have a little something extra for you. Or if you prefer, you can always go to www.targetfmi.com. Okay, let's get into this.
There we go.
This guy's really it's exciting. Okay, Mike Papantonio is the host of the nationally syndicated radio show Ring of Fire with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and Sam Cedar. He also hosts America's Lawyers on the RT American Network and has appeared as a political commentator on MSNBC, Free Speech TV, RT American Network, and Fox News. He is a senior partner at Levin and Papantonio, one of the nation's largest plaintiff law firms. Elected in 2012 as president of the National Trial Lawyers Association, Papantonio has received numerous awards for his legal work and was one of the youngest attorneys inducted into the Trial Lawyer Hall of Fame. He is the author of numerous books. Well, we'll just see about that. Including the legal thriller Law and Disorder, which we'll be discussing tonight. Or no, we're going to be talking about Law and Vengeance. And co-author of the New York Times political bestseller, Air America, The Playbook. Law and Vengeance, we're reading, is his second novel. So, if you would, please put your hands together and please welcome to the Writer's Block, Mike Papantonio. Now, Mike, I'm going to assume you're still with us.
Yeah, well, thank you for the invitation.
Well, it sounds
like a high energy program.
Well, you know, I tell everybody, we have you write your own bio because only you know where the lies are. So, I mean, and being a lawyer, I mean, you could always set yourself up. That's pretty good. So.
Always that possibility.
There you go. So you were saying before we went on the air about you were down in Washington, D.C. talking about the opioid epidemic.
Yeah, well, we're one of the lead lawyers handling the national opioid case. And as the case progresses, it just is clear to everybody that what we've let is a bunch of corporate thugs. They're killing about 190 people a day right now dying from opioid overdoses. And, you know, it's just become the norm, and that's what these books are about. Mm-hmm. Law and Disorder, actually happened. Those are real cases. Law and Vengeance, those are cases we actually handled as well. So it makes, and by the way, Law and Addiction is the next one coming out.
Oh. That's the case.
Okay. In March of 2019. So, you know, these books come pretty easily because they're actually, they're based on facts.
Uh-huh.
You know, the idea is I add some intrigue, and the murders typically don't happen, but
right.
It gets close to that sometimes.
Right.
But so they flow from real life events.
Well, I was interested in the reason I chose the music that I chose for tonight's show is because you had a number of Perry Mason moments in this book that I read, Law and Vengeance, mm-hmm. and I figured, well, what more righteous music to open the show with you as a guest and Perry Mason? So.
One of my heroes, yeah.
Oh, there you see? I didn't do bad.
You did well.
I did well.
Yes.
Along with Atticus Finch, I think.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, I had never seen so many references to Kill a Mockingbird or Atticus Finch in my life.
And we're watching To Kill a Mockingbird as soon as we get off the air tonight.
Wasn't Gregory Peck superb in that? Absolutely.
Oh,
how about that scene where he's walking out of the courtroom and you still stand because your father's passing. That's a powerful scene for any trial lawyer, I got to tell you.
Yeah, it was good.
It motivated me. To Kill a Mockingbird was one of the reasons that I chose to practice law.
Really? Because I read the book as well, and I just thought that one was as good, although a little bit different than the other, and I like them both equally as well. So.
Well, glad to hear that.
Yeah, I really did, but I never put together his daughter's real name and the name of the lawyer's boat.
Yeah, well, you know, we're all influenced by certain things, kind of those formative years, and we You know, we have to decide what we think we want to do with our lives, and that was a powerful story if you think about it.
Right.
I mean, you know, the character was such a powerful character. He's what you know. I wrote a book one time, In Search of Atticus Finch was the name of the book, and it was written for lawyers about how to improve their quality of life, and maybe we ought to look to what Atticus Finch did and finding balance in our lives, and at the same time doing a good job as a lawyer.
Right.
And before I started writing fiction, I wrote nonfiction. The first one was called In Search of Atticus Finch. The second one was a book about Clarence Darrow, and then the third one was Resurrecting Aesop. And they were really designed to kind of help lawyers find their way. It's like any profession, just like your profession. You get so, you almost become myopic with what you do day to day, and you forget that there's other parts of your life that you need to attend to, your
right,
family
right.
and your spouse. And so those early books were about that. And then I thought, well, let me take a shot at fiction. And it was a lot more difficult, but it was a lot more fun, too.
Well, you obviously had a good time writing it because it reads that way.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
That's a very nice compliment.
Well,
really
you know what? Honestly, I'm sitting here thinking, God, how do you interview an interviewer?
Exactly.
You know,
if you really think about what we're able to do, isn't it a wonderful job we have?
I
remember one time trying to get my arms around how I was going to interview Noam Chomsky or Howard Zinn, and I was thinking, what do you ask these guys?
Yeah.
These are people that have, you know, just remarkable people, and it's a conversation, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And you know, we had week before last, we had writer John Sanford of all the Prey novels and Lucas Davenport and all those. We call them airport books because that's, you know, we can't go to an airport and not find a John Sanford book. But
you talk to great writers then, don't you?
Yeah. Oh yeah, we do. Oh my God, we've had some good ones. Well, this is our third year, so I mean, we've had some pretty good ones. But you know, I mean, it was hard coming up with questions for John Sanford as well. So it's going to be the same thing with you tonight. So
hey, try interviewing John Glenn.
No, thank you.
I did that. So yeah.
Where do you start? That's a good point.
Yeah. I mean, how do you talk to a guy that's, you know, did three spirals around the earth?
Extremely respectfully is how you talk to
sure.
John Glenn.
Yeah.
Yes.
Sure. Okay, let's get into some question and answer periods here.
I'm ready. I got one right now. You had mentioned that your books are based on actual cases that you've been involved in or that you've read about.
I've been involved in my law firm. I mean, the law firm is one of the oldest plaintiffs firm in the country, and we're the people who actually started the tobacco litigation right out of Pensacola, Florida, of all places.
Wow!
And those are the types of cases that I handle. I actually try cases for other lawyers throughout the country. You'll have a lawyer with a 1-800 been injured kind of thing, and they get these large numbers of pharmaceutical cases, or maybe it's an environmental case or a case against Wall Street, whistleblower cases.
Right,
but people don't realize there's really only the percentage of trial lawyers in this country. I think there's 800,000 lawyers, but there's less than 0.003%, something remarkable like that, that actually try cases. And so what we do at our firm is we try cases everywhere from California to New York. For other lawyers who, you know, they're kind of advertising lawyers, they get a lot of cases, but then somebody has to go try the case.
Yeah. So when you take your cases, I mean, how much of the actual case do you bring in? I mean, or do you have to kind of walk a fine line that you're not using information that you shouldn't be, or how does that work for you?
It's rare that you have that problem. For example, but that's a great question. Right now, for example, in the opioid litigation, or better yet, the Roundup litigation, Monsanto Roundup, of course, I don't know if you know the story, but it's causing cancer all over the globe.
Mm-hmm.
And so although I take the depositions in that case and I'll try the case, I'm really, there's a gag order on what I'm able to talk about. Mm-hmm. And that's unfortunate. And I've always thought that was such a bad idea. Because here you have a product that literally is killing people with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and all types of cancers. And you're not able to go on the air and talk about it. And for years I've really fought this notion of a judge being able to enter a gag order and say, no, you can't talk about these documents. And it's really a problem in the system. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there are times when there are things I can't talk about. Most of the time, the case is opioid, for example. By the time this third book comes out, won't be over with, but it'll be close. It'll be close. So I have to use some discretion in what I put in there and what I don't.
Uh-huh.
Okay. I always wondered when somebody writes a book based on a actual case, but it's not a nonfiction, they're fictionalizing it, how much of the actual case they can work in and not have somebody coming after them
right.
with a lawyer right behind with
right.
a, with a lawsuit, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the great thing about that kind of writing is anybody would be insane to bring a lawsuit against me for the cases I talk about, because it simply opens the door for me to go back in and attack them again.
Sure.
That's the great thing about being sued for slander or libel. Truth is a defense. And the other side, you know, you kind of have to be careful what you ask for.
Yeah,
right.
You bring a lawsuit
right.
like that, and the next thing you know, you're the one under the gun being deposed, and uh-huh. you find it kind of goes bad on you very
uh-huh.
often.
Uh-huh. You, in your book, The Law and Vengeance, you've got some really strong characters in here,
mm-hmm.
and I was thoroughly impressed with the two owners of the firm. The senior partners, but also with Gina Romano. She's quite the lady. Well, I didn't even know if you can really call her a lady. Quite the lawyer. she's a tough broad.
All of the characters are kind of a composite, which, you know, when you practice, well, any profession, but uh-huh. you run into these characters and you make a note. There might be some quality about them that you just think is so unusual or so attractive or so intriguing.
Uh-huh.
And so over the years, I've kind of done that because I've had the opportunity to try cases with and against, honestly, some of the best trial lawyers in the country. And Gina Romano is a composite of female, very talented female trial lawyers that I've worked against and with over the years. And she's somebody that you'd want to hire. I can promise you, if you had a big case, Gina Romano is who you'd want to hire.
I got that.
I thought, you know, the reason I focused on Gina Romano so is you wouldn't think so, but in the legal practice, I mean, here you have a profession that's supposed to be progressive. They're supposed to be the people looking out for everybody's rights. There really is a terrible glass ceiling for female trial lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been angry about it for a long time, and I've written about it in journals and such as that and given speeches about it. And, you know, it's just so counterintuitive to believe that in our profession that there are any limitations for anybody. And believe it or not, female trial lawyers have a very difficult time making that move through the profession. And so I had fun with Gina Romano. She's going to resurface again, a little more developed, but so that was part of the motivation for inventing Gina Romano.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
May I jump in and ask a question about another character since we're
absolutely
talking about characters?
Not.
I have to say that one of the to me one of the most terrifying characters is this little squirrely guy, Ivanhoe.
Oh yes,
and he's part of what's so terrifying about him, of course, is how he can get into everything that we think is secure.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted you to just chat a little bit about your experiences. Again, I'm guessing he's a composite, but tell us a little bit about Ivanhoe, but how you use him in this story.
Yeah, Ivanhoe's a sociopath. He's not quite a psychopath, but he's certainly a sociopath. And people, the interesting thing about that character is here you have a millennial, and he seems to run contrary to everything you'd expect of a millennial, and that is because sometimes we have these preconceived notions about, you know, how people look and where they fit in. And that's a broader theme that I use often and matter of fact, you'll see it a lot in the third book, Law and Addiction. And here's what I mean by that. We, as a culture, we find, and I that's what I loved about Ivanhoe, but if as a culture we look at somebody, for example, the thugs on Wall Street that stole $3 trillion from our economy from mom-and-pop pension programs,
right,
and nobody went to jail.
Right.
So we look at those characters and we say, you know, they're in Armani suits, for God's sakes. They have Rolex watches. They drive Bentleys. They don't look like thugs. They don't look like the character on a street corner wearing a hoodie that, you know, is thrown in jail for selling 5 ounces of marijuana. So that was the fun of Ivanhoe to me. You know, it's not something you would expect with this character. I mean, he's highly educated millennial. He comes up with all the bells and whistles of a lot of millennials of having a really big understanding of systems and technology. But what I liked about it was that it's kind of the same analogy, and that is we sometimes get sucked into this idea of how we look at people and where we think they fit into a culture. And I work against sociopaths virtually all the time. They're across this table from me in depositions. I just finished with 3 sociopaths, in depositions in the last month. And so But they didn't look like that. You see, they spoke well. They had MBAs. They were from Yale and Princeton and places like that. And so we sometimes get sucked into that. And I like to play with that. I like to play with that idea. I'm gonna in third book. There's a lot of that actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was pretty scary.
He was.
He is scary because he's such a contradiction, isn't he?
Yeah.
You know, he rides a skateboard, and he's really good with it.
Yeah, that's what cracked me up. I mean, he pulls a skateboard out of his backpack and takes off.
And gets away.
Well, gets away.
Yeah, and he can find out anything about anybody in ways that I certainly didn't even think were possible. What's going on with technology today, and, you know, is insidious. That's another piece of it. I sit as a reader, and I go, oh, my gosh, would somebody be listening in to me? I mean, why would they? But... Oh,
yeah. Well, if you have your Kindle, they're reading along with you.
Aren't we kind of in that age when we it's becoming more evident, isn't it? When we know that we know they have the capability of doing that with our phone. The lawsuits have already shown that. What they do with Facebook is remarkable. We're in a technology age that it's moving so fast we almost can't adjust to it,
right.
And that's what Ivanhoe brings to the story.
Right.
For example, most people would not have any clue that about the idea that any car that's been made in the last probably 5 years with highly tech computers can be commandeered through hacking.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so. You hear bits and pieces of that, and you say, God, that sounds like a conspiracy theory and sounds very tinfoil hat,
uh-huh.
But it really isn't. Everything Ivanhoe did in there is
right.
Absolutely doable.
Well, you know what you did to the sales of Lincoln Navigators, right?
Yeah, I'll
take Jennifer. I want Jennifer instead.
Yeah, I told my wife after I got done reading your book that I was selling my car.
He was so angry that I killed him. He was so angry. Angus. He's a wonderful person. In real life, they call him Moose. He was a center for the University of Florida, All American, massive character, and they call him Moose.
Mm-hmm.
And he really liked being in that first book because he was such an interesting character.
Uh-huh.
And then killing him off in the I don't know if you've ever had this experience where you're writing about, and you have to say, Moose, I got to kill you off. And it's not just a matter of a passing reaction. He actually was angry. So, but that was an interest to me. That whole scene was all doable. And when people talk to me about it, they say, "Well, can you really do that?" And the answer is, "Yes, you can."
Yeah. Well, it's funny you should say that because whenever I kill anybody off in one of my novels, I get an immediate phone call from my sister-in-law. Why'd you kill him off for? I really liked him.
She's not the only one that feels that way.
No, I know.
But that means that you're a great writer because we feel compassion or something about that character has touched us.
Right.
But we really don't want to say goodbye to them.
No.
You know?
No,
so
you
I think
really don't. Yeah. You don't. That's right.
And you know who else I really liked in this book was Benny. Benny was like the golden retriever that sits by your side and takes care of you. You know, he's always there. Mm-hmm. He's developed as the book goes.
He is. He's based on a couple of characters that I've met over the years, and one of them actually was an investigator. He wasn't a Seminole Indian, but I liked Benny too. What I liked about Benny, you know, I guess an author should be free to talk about what they like and don't like
sure.
about their inventions. But the thing I liked about him is he just hit on all parts.
Right.
It was a great father, a wonderful spouse. He, you know, was just as straight as it could be. He had the ability of really being on the edge all the time. You know, if you look at what happened to the Seminole Indians in Florida, I know quite a bit about that history.
Uh-huh.
I was raised in Florida, and they have every right to be angry, but Benny is always that anger is right below the surface. You know, from the time that he beats up his trainer in police academy, from the time he played football, that character to me is one I really like too.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep Benny around.
I hope so.
Benny shows up in the third book.
Yeah, he's so quiet. He's just so quiet, but then he comes up with these cutting little remarks that are just great.
Yes. Yes.
Absolutely. Hang tough. Don't go away. I've got to do another real quick commercial, and we'll be right back to you. So stay with us, Mike.
I'll stand by.
Okay. All right. Here we go. This is it. Imagine deep blue skies, majestic mountains, and acres of lush green orange trees in a tranquil country setting. Sound like a perfect vacation spot? Well, it is for your dog. That's right. All Dogs Rule Day Camp and Sleepover is the premium place for your four-legged friends to spend their time away from you. Whether you are going away for a one- or two-night getaway or an extended vacation, All Dogs Rule is the place your dog wants to be when they can't be with you. When your dog returns home, you'll have to ask whose vacation was better and whose was, Richard?
It was the house hound.
The house hound or the dog?
The dog.
Check out their website at alldogsrule.com or give them a call, 805-524-1100, and your dog truly will thank you for it. And it is now 7:27 on the old Calypso clock on the wall, and we are LA Talk Radio. You're listening to the Writer's Block. We have on the line with us tonight, writer Mike Papantonio, and he is, I'm sure he's just waiting with bated breath to come back on with us. And if you want to call and talk in with Mike tonight, the number into the studio is 818-602-4929. Again, that number is 818-602-4929. And Mike, you're here with us.
Standing by.
Okay. Oh, incidentally, before I forget, a coffee mug that says the Writer's Block and LA Talk Radio in the back of it went out for you yesterday.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
And it'll be there tomorrow.
I can tell y'all have a lot of fun with this show. That's why it's a good show. Huh?
We do have a lot of fun.
I know you've listened to Frickin' Frack over the years.
Oh yeah.
It's the same feel, and I don't know anything about it. I don't know anything about fixing a car, but I listen to them because they have fun, and that's what I've always tried to do.
Well, that's the whole idea of a radio show, isn't it?
Yeah,
have
it
fun.
Is, absolutely is.
Have fun. I mean, you know, we like I said, we've been on the air now for 3 years, on the 17th, actually.
Mm-hmm. And coming up,
and we have a good time. We read a book a week, which sometimes gets to be a chore. But we managed to muddle through it.
No, never a chore.
Well, I'm not really retired anymore, but for those of you that are retired, Bobby Jane, I mean, you get to read a book a week, and that's the promise we made when we first started the show, that we would read the author's book. I do not want to interview an author and not have read his work. It's not fair to the author. So my producer does not give me crib notes. We actually read the book. So our questions all come from the heart, Mike. That's where they come from.
And it shows, yeah. Appreciate that.
And like I said, how do you interview another interviewer? It's really tough. I mean, you know, I think we're doing okay, but, you know.
Yeah, I think you do a great job. We're having a conversation, aren't we?
Well, that's what we're supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
Okay.
So sometimes the stuff I've done over the years, for example, America's Lawyer is, you know, it's kind of stilted in the sense that it's really not a conversation. You're going through segments of interviews of, you know, issues that they're more political, legal kinds of issues, mm-hmm. and I don't enjoy doing that as much as I do just Ring of Fire, where you can just sit there and talk, have a good time, and
You use the phrase in your book, and I'm there are two kinds of lawyers. There's a lawyer that knows the law, and there's a lawyer that knows the judge. Where did that come from?
that is based on. Let me put it this way: in the people I work against, for the most part, are what we would call white shoe, silk stocking. Corporate lawyers, you know, they for whatever reason they graduate law school and they feel like they have more of a kinship with kind of the establishment. They're comfortable with the country club. They're comfortable with that whole social scene. And the place you usually see these relationships that I was trying to address there is that you know, sometimes. It goes a little bit over the edge. Sometimes, you know, Judge Jones at the country club is somebody that they've known for years, and all of a sudden that judge has a tendency to lose objectivity in the way that he carries out his rulings and his decisions. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, in the defense bar, I mean, I'd be considered part of the plaintiff's bar. In other words, I handle claimants' cases. In the defense bar, you see that very often, and sometimes lawyers with minimal talent get results simply because they happen to, you know, be in the country club, be in some type of social club with a judge, you know, in kind of those elite circles.
Uh-huh.
It's not what you know, it's who you know.
Yes, that's exactly right, Richard. Yeah. It's an extension of that.
Wow. You know what? I kind of thought that it probably happened, but...
Well, let me ask you this, Mike. I don't know if you run into this at the higher levels, the federal levels, but years ago, my dad's company was involved in a lawsuit, and it was a smaller county, and their lawyer walked in, and he goes, okay, we got this judge... pulls out his Rolodex, pulls out a card and goes, okay, this is the tie I'm wearing, this is the suit I'm wearing, this is what you're going to wear. And they're asking him why that. He goes, over the years, he's built this system so that how he dresses improves his chances of winning. And I don't know if you get that detailed at the higher levels. Is there that kind of information out there that you guys use for these judges?
Oh, you know, that is, there's a whole discipline, there's a whole discipline that those types of things have been focused. Something is even as basic. When I do an opening, you know, I want to wear a brown suit. As the cross-examinations begin and I move more into an attack mode, those suits will move from blues to browns, red ties, gold ties. So, yeah, there's absolutely a whole body of information that's been gathered over the years through a lot of focus group kind of work. Lisa Blue she's well known for that. She's a psychologist and a very talented female trial lawyer. She spent a lot of time actually looking into that, and there is something to it. You know, there's something to it. In an extended trial, most of my trials are maybe two and a half months, so that pacing becomes extremely important.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a 3-day trial, probably not so much, but when you're in a courtroom for 2.5-3 months with a jury, you have to be very, very conscious of that,
mm-hmm.
and. So yeah, there's some truth to that.
So even I mean, we've heard about juries, you know, they do that, but even for the judges too, then.
Yeah, I think most of the time, the level that I do this in federal court, most of these times, I handle what they call bellwether test cases, and let's say, for example, there's 3,000 Yaz cases in the country. That was one of the products that I talked about in Law and Disorder. It was a birth control pill that was killing women.
Mm-hmm.
So what I do is I end up trying to test cases that actually end up influencing whether or not that project settles or not. Mm-hmm. And there may be five bellwether cases. For example, the case I just finished up in Ohio, there were five bellwether cases in that national litigation, and that's where DuPont had absolutely devastated the Ohio River Valley with a toxin called C8 that was killing people all types of ways, cancer primarily. So what I would do is try those first test cases, and then after those test cases are then tried, it kind of paves the way for other lawyers to jump in, and if the case doesn't settle, then they pick up from there.
Gotcha. Go ahead, Bobby.
I would like to just ask another question that's kind of geared to you as a writer and your writer process, if I might. You work on, it sounds like pretty much, you have a book and then another book. So tell us, do you write a little every day? Kind of, how do you organize your life so that there's time to write?
I wish I could write every day. As a matter of fact, that is a problem with what I do. I'm sure y'all have heard of Alan Russell. He's out there on the West Coast. He's a wonderful writer, wrote Burning Man and a whole series of stories like that. And I mean, we talk about that all the time. He helps, he's such a great source to bounce ideas off of. And a guy like Alan will write, I mean, feverishly, 12 hours a day, all compact. I'd love to be able to do that, but I find I have to do it in cycles,
mm-hmm.
and in those cycles, it's very compact.
Mm-hmm.
I'm able to, I work 12 to 14 hours a day when I'm in that cycle.
Mm-hmm.
But all along, I'm always visualizing, I'm always outlining, I'm always trying to work on that concept of show me, don't tell me.
Right.
I'm always saying, how do I show this? I don't
want
to, how do I avoid telling a story? How do I show this story? And I'm always working on that. As a matter of fact, when I was this past week, I was in the staffers for the congressional hearings that are coming up for the opioid hearings. It'll take place next Tuesday. You might follow that. They're going to be interesting hearings. But at any rate, I'm meeting with the staffers there in D.C. about this whole thing. But as I'm doing it, I'm visualizing how I'm going to use that scene. How am I going to show this scene? I don't want to tell the story. I want to show the story. So I'm always doing that, and I'm always keeping notes of that. And I feel like that really helps me play catch up, because mm-hmm. I never get mentally lazy about the story I want to tell.
Sure. We have Henry Park is going to be calling in. He's our roving reporter. Do you okay with hanging out with us while Henry calls in?
Yeah, this is fun.
Oh, perfect. Perfect.
It is.
Have you ever had writer's block? Since, that's the name of the show.
Yeah.
Did you ever have it? Or if you did have it?
As I always do. It's a little trick I learned along the way that I always stop writing with the hot hand. When I'm in a scene that I'm going, wow, this is just flowing and flowing, I stop. And that way, when I come back, I can pick up. It's easy to pick up that flow, and I almost tricks myself into avoiding that kind of block.
Uh-huh.
Wow,
well,
that's
actually
a great answer. We haven't had that one before.
Never. We have actually Henry now, too, so stick with us, Mike, if you would.
Yeah, of course.
Okay. Good evening, Henry.
Oh, good evening.
Oh, you
there
know
he
what?
Is.
Hey.
Hello.
Uh-oh, wait a minute. Hang on.
I can hear him.
Okay. I know you can hear him, but I think we lost Mike and Bobby Jean.
Oh, no.
Oh, two down, two to go.
Damn it. Okay, wait a minute. Resume call. Okay. Mike, are you still with us? Oh, crap.
Maybe not.
Oh, man. I hate it when I do that.
Hey, in the meantime, I want to find out how I can stay at the All Dogs Rule Day Camp.
Go get yourself a really big Great Dane costume, and you can sneak right in.
Resuming this call, we'll put the other calls on hold. All right, hang on. All right, Bobby Jean, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, Mike, are you there?
I am.
Okay.
Oh, we got him back.
Henry, call back.
We hung up on Henry.
Henry, call back.
Oh.
Anyway, where were we? We were talking about... writer's block.
Yeah.
All right.
I've always... You know, when I first started writing, it's like one of those gremlins you hear. You know, you're going to get writer's block. I guess when I was in law school, I never had the time for it because, you know, you're taking a five-hour exam for every course that you're taking, and you have one shot to write an essay on that exam where you fail out of law school. So you really, you know, if you ever got writer's block, it was bad. So I always just started writing.
Whatever
came to my head, I just started moving, you know.
Right.
And I felt like that movement always was something that stuck with me, and it stuck with me, and I took it to the next point of just saying, let me really stop when I'm really writing.
There you go. We should have Henry back now. So Henry, are you with us?
I'm with you.
Okay, we got Mike, Henry, and Bobby Jean.
Henry, all right. Hello, everybody.
Hot damn. Hello. Oh, Henry, meet Mike Papantonio.
Yes, I've been enjoying the talk very much. I've got a family full of lawyers, so it's like speaking my language almost.
So what do you got, Henry?
But, no, it sounds fascinating. I'm sorry. Well, I'll tell you. TCM Classic Film Festival was held this past weekend in Hollywood, in and around the Chinese Theater. They only showed two Westerns out of like 90 films. But there were two great Henry Fondas and diametrically opposed, William Wellman's The Oxbow Incident and Sergio Leone's Once Upon a Time in the West.
That was both good choices.
Now, a new
choices.
Contemporary Western premieres on the INSP network on Saturday night.
Which is?
It's called Borderline because it's about two Georgia lawmen whose jurisdictions border each other. And they've got a great pair of leads playing them. Tom Wopat from Dukes of Hazzard.
Right.
Did you know he got a Tony nomination for Annie Get Your Gun?
I did not.
Yes.
Oh, you did know that?
He's done a lot of musicals. He doesn't sing in this, unfortunately. Oh, and the other is Jeff Fahey, who was Ike Clanton in Wyatt Earp. And
right.
So good as Zachariah in Justified.
Right.
It's really very good. It's a real action-packed, exciting, sincere picture. And speaking of INSP, season 3 of The Cowboy Way, Alabama, started last Thursday night, and there's another episode on tonight. I'm going to be posting a new roundup on Friday night, and it's going to be a Cowboys and Indians post. I'll be discussing the highlights of the Santa Clarita Cowboy Festival and the Autry's recent American Indian Marketplace.
Uh-huh.
Now, this weekend, it's Ramona's Old West Days in Ramona, California.
Oh, my God. Ramona.
This is done by the Reenactment Guild of America, which I've never heard of.
Richard's giving me a look.
But
like,
I understand they're fabulous.
Where the hell is Ramona?
Yeah. I've never been there.
Since North San Diego County, directly east of Escondido. In
okay.
The mountains.
Must be it.
Okay.
They used to have a drag strip there.
And now we know how you know it. Okay, all right.
Well, I understand they have huge encampments representing several different places and periods in the 19th century America, a big showdown at sundown where many people will be shot, and reenactment groups compete for prizes, hopefully with blanks.
Well, yeah.
You can lay
hey, we got
line
we have a game. Litigator on the other line.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Nicely
of,
done,
of
Henry.
The Autry, as I was before I talked about that, a week from Saturday on the 12th, as part of their What is a Western series, they're showing The Man from Del Rio from 1956, starring Anthony Quinn and Katy Jurado from High Noon and so many other things. It's one of the very few American Westerns featuring two Mexican lead characters and played by actors born in Mexico.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wasn't
now,
she married to Ernest
Borgnine? At the Autry, Rob Words, a Word on Westerns program, is their annual birthday salute to John Wayne. I haven't heard about the guests yet, but Rob always gets great people. And you know what? You can read all about that and so much more at www.henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com.
Thanks, Henry. As always,
pleasure.
It's been fun. And it's been real.
Yes, it has.
And it's been real
Happy
fun.
Trails.
Happy trails. And we'll talk to you in a couple weeks.
I look forward to it.
Okay, bud, thanks.
Okay, you bet. Bye-bye.
So, Mike, you've now been indoctrinated with Henry Park.
I wish I could write a Western. Think about Lonesome Dove. Think, as I was listening to him, Lonesome Dove, that was such a shift, if you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you try to analyze what people loved about it, I mean, they obviously loved the character. How do you get better than Robert Duvall in that character?
Right.
But, it was Tommy Lee Jones. Yeah, it was just a great cast. But you know what? To me, when I tried to figure out what was the appeal, I loved the series. But it was the simplicity, wasn't it? It was mm-hmm. the notion of, gee, this was a simpler time, far less complicated
right.
in a lot of ways. But right. I think that's the attraction to Westerns. I wish I had the ability to write a Western.
Well, right and wrong was instantaneous.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so that's what I write was Westerns, so I have a good time with them.
Okay. Well, that's I just think it takes a special talent. Did you golly, I'm turning into the interview here, but you got my curiosity up. Did you grow up around that?
I grew up around horses. Not so much. Well, I went to I studied history in college and was going to be a history teacher. And then I focused on Western expansion, 1840, 1890. So I, did some field trips and learned a lot. What I could learn, it's
really not guesswork, is it? I mean, you really have to have some substance.
You have to know what you're doing.
Central Florida, around a place called Arcadia, Florida. It was the home of the All Florida Championship Rodeo, and I'll never forget a man by the name of this name is such a spectacular name. If you can ever use it in a novel, you really should. His name was Matt Condo, and he was actually a bull rider. I mean,
wow.
how is that any more perfect for a name? Matt
wow.
Condo is a bull rider.
Yeah, I like
and
it. Maybe I will use it.
Yeah.
I mean, I've used them all before.
Why not? Yeah.
Oh, I mean, I have characters.
I'm sure he's no longer around. He was about 5'7" and just the toughest looking character, and with a name like Matt Condo. So he could have either been an NFL quarterback or a bull rider. So I guess he chose the easy.
Well, we are quickly running out of time here. So if you wouldn't mind giving our audience where they can find your books. You have a website. I know I've been there a couple times.
And, yeah, well, I mean, Amazon and books, Barnes & Noble. The book is fairly easy to get. But you know what? I'm embarrassed that I can't give you the website. I don't know. Maybe it's under Law and Disorder. Maybe that was the first place.
No, I think it's under MikePapantonio.com.
Papantonio is easy enough to follow, and that'll lead you to the book. And, of course, I'm grateful, and we're all aren't we all grateful as authors when somebody reaches out and takes
yes.
a chance on reading what we have to say?
Yes, we are grateful.
It seemed so important when we were writing it. It just seemed it seemed so smart when we were writing it.
Yeah, I know.
And it also
and then my wife reads them, and that they just go down the drain.
Well, it was a page turner, and I enjoyed every minute of it.
Yep,
well,
excellent,
very
excellent
kind.
Book. The book is Law and Vengeance. You can find it at Amazon, all online booksellers. It's written by our guest tonight, Mike Papantonio. And thank you so much for giving us the time. I know it's getting late out there in good old Florida. And you probably got a busy day ahead of you. And so we appreciate the time you spent with us.
Very kind of you to have me on the show. And I genuinely enjoyed it.
Well,
I got to tell you.
We thank you.
I get interviewed, and this is a fun interview.
We thank you. And just be looking for that coffee mug because it's on its way.
I appreciate that.
Oh,
thanks
and
a lot.
We love sending them. Thanks for joining us, Mike.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
That was author Mike Papantonio.
Yeah.
And Richard,
I want to read the next one.
Huh? Oh, I know. I want the
next
one, too. Yeah. Yeah, Law and Opioids.
Oh, that should be good.
Mm-hmm. This is your last show.
This is my last show in the co-host seat.
Yep. Yep. But I'm sure we'll be hearing from you.
In about 3 weeks.
Okay. besides that,
I'm the scheduled guest in 3 weeks. I better be here, right?
I already know what your opening music is going to be that week, so I don't have to do anything with that.
We picked a good one.
So, BJB.
Yes.
You're going to watch To Killing Mockingbird?
Yes, I found it last night on Netflix.
Really?
And I just decided that would be what we would watch tonight. You know, I read it years ago, and I have more memory of the movie than the book, but I think I need to read the book again as well.
Yeah, yeah. The book. Actually, I really like the book a lot.
Yeah. I don't think Gregory Peck ever made a bad movie.
No.
So this is, you're gonna have a blast.
No, McKenna's Gold.
Okay, that was, you know, let me go out with one last movie before, you know,
that was a bad movie.
Goodbye,
Julie Newmar was an Indian. Give me a break.
Okay. Oh my gosh, you guys have instant recall on these things.
that was Gregory's out the door.
It was so much fun being back in the studio and then seeing you all at the festival. It was just great. It felt like we had never, you know, stepped away.
It was great having you.
Greeting me so warmly and making us feel so welcome.
Well, you're always welcome in the studio with us, Bobby Jean. You know that. Well, not with him because he's gone. With me, Bobby Jean.
Fine.
And now it'll be Brill.
And this is how it is.
This, for those of you who have been listening tonight, is Richard's last night in the co-host chair.
Yep.
He is moving to Omaha, Nebraska next Thursday.
Next Thursday.
Yeah.
I'll be on the road.
Yeah. Next Thursday, we have,
my traveling music will be Eastbound and Down by Jerry Reed.
I love that song.
There you go.
That's from,
Smokey and the Bandit.
Yeah. It's a great movie.
As we transition into movie hour here at LA Talk Radio.
Okay, we are now looking at next week's author is Wayne Avershaw. Mm-hmm. He's another attorney. It's another Law & Order book.
There you go.
He'll be actually in studio with us because he just lives right down the road. And the following week, the week that Richard really wanted to be here, his friend and compatriot, right or wrong, it's a she.
Read her book. Ireland Calls My Name. I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to the people listening.
Right,
read her
wrong.
Book. Call Ireland Calls My Name. It is a great book.
Yep. I don't know. I'll get into it.
You will like it. As a stay guy.
God. That's coming from a guy. Coming from a guy that his father's only lawsuit was because Richard fell off the derrick sued the company.
No. I didn't fall. I got swatted.
Okay. There we go. Well, guys, thanks for another great show. Bobby Jean, always a pleasure having you. If not here, then on the line.
And we will stay in touch, guys.
And
I promise.
You better. And that's going to be it for us tonight. For Bobby Jean Bell, Richard Polinelli, and myself, Jim Christina, we are pretty much out of here.